There are a small number of schools, persistent performers and slow to turn things around despite intervention. A new report by the think tank New Zealand Initiative finds that 8% of schools are failing to perform and some students will spend all their school days in them. The report analyses Education Review Office, or ERO, data and says that 90% of the country's 2,500 schools are performing well or demonstrating consistent high-quality performance. But it finds that 8% of schools are poor performers and more than a third of those failed to meet expectations for at least two consecutive reviews by ERO. A smaller number had been floundering for more than a decade. The report author, Martin Utahamuka, says despite having rich data available to it, neither the Ministry of Education nor the Education Review Office are properly monitoring interventions to determine what works and why. Martin is in the Wellington studio. Very good morning. Welcome.
Good morning, Catherine.
First, you do acknowledge that most schools are going well. Overall, the system is a good one.
That's right, yes. The system is definitely working for a lot of our students, yes.
But those schools that are struggling significantly and needing intervention can often stay in that situation for too long. How long in some cases?
In some cases, it's more than 10 years, actually. So a small number of schools that have been underperforming have been in that way for an average of 8 to 9 years. And in some cases, it's been more than 10 years. So it's much longer than an entire schooling career of students.
It is quite a startling point that you might start a primary school at age 5 and at age 12 exit it. And if it's been struggling as an organisation, struggling for all those years, that's your entire primary school.
That's right.
What are the situations we're talking about? What is a struggling school at the point of needing an intervention or assistance? What sorts of things? What's the failure?
So the majority of the schools are actually smaller rural primary area schools, and the Education Review Office actually looks at a number of elements to look at how a school is performing. So they're not just looking at one element of a school's performance, and they look at how leadership quality is, teacher quality, and how a different number of elements work together to contribute to student achievement. And with the smaller number of schools they've been underperforming for an average of eight years, it's that leadership has been ineffective for that long to effect change and to address these challenges that are being addressed in different. So it's different sort of challenges for each school.
Is it mainly leadership? Is that because we're going to talk about the nuances here and schools that are working in very challenging situations, working in areas of disadvantage, and how the measures aren't very nuanced in dealing with what success is in those circumstances.
That's right.
But if we're talking about schools that are poorly performing or needing intervention, is it often seen as a leadership crisis?
In many of the cases that we looked at, it was leadership. So a majority of the schools had a change in principal at least once in the last 5 years, and some of them had a change in principal at least 3 times in the previous 5 years.
Also, I think some of the 67 school boards, the functions have been taken over entirely by the Ministry of Education.
By the Ministry of Education. So it's some functions or all of the functions, yes.
And worryingly, in half of those cases, the students affected, these were lower decile schools.
That's right.
Schools coming from areas of economic disadvantage.
You
also, though, What are the interventions there? Because you talk about missed opportunities to manage poor performance. So what's happening? What's the role first of ERO, if any, and then of the Ministry of Education in intervening and providing support? What's missing there?
What we think is missing there is actually the use of data on interventions. So the Education Review Office will go into a school on the ground and find out and look at what's going well and what's not going well. And their role is actually just working with the school to identify what can be done. And sometimes the ERO can work with the school to work out an action plan to make changes. And if ERO finds that it's important for the ministry to intervene, they can recommend that to the ministry as well. However, what we found concerning is that the amount of data and information that's available on the interventions that have happened over these many years in schools are not being used to systematically find out what works and what doesn't work in which challenges.
What kind of data? Because when I think of data, I think, and we're going to talk more about this, things like, you know, national standards data or reading and maths records or, you know, PISA results at high school. When you talk about data in this context, what are you talking about?
What I mean, for example, is say if we take these 20 schools that haven't been doing well for a long period of time. So if you're putting changes and say you're putting in a new principal or you're changing the curriculum or you're making different sort of changes, you should be looking back to figure out whether that actually has worked effectively. And if it hasn't worked, why has it not worked? So that if there's another school that comes up with the same sort of challenges, then you know how to address that.
Is there a standard procedure? Do we know that the ministry uses if it's looking to intervene like this? Does it first look to leadership and perhaps bolstering mentorship in the first instance? Does it look at whether extra special needs or supports might be needed to support teachers in the classroom? I mean, is there a standard procedure it will look through?
Not as far as I understand. I think every school is taken as an individual school with unique challenges. However, again, many schools can be presenting with the same sort of challenges. So we're saying that the schools are similar sort of schools, smaller rural primary school areas in lower decile areas as well. So though there is no step-by-step processes and it's unique processes for each school, I think there is room to actually really figure out systematically what sort of interventions can work for this sort of schools as well.
Do they tend to be connected schools that are having high turnover or morale issues? Will they also be having financial issues or problems trying to fill jobs? And will they also have problems getting through a curriculum? And will they also have problems getting good results for the students, whether it's national standards or whatever other measures? Do they tend to all happen together?
Absolutely. So for this again, the smaller number of schools that we're talking about, it can become a combination of areas that are not well managed at the school level.
Safety of students and staff is another matter I've mentioned. All right. Well, look, you also say, though, you also acknowledge this, and I'm interested in where you're coming from on this, because I've heard it from principals and I've heard it from teachers and teacher unions, which is that current benchmarks, I'm quoting you here, current benchmarks can unfairly penalise schools with students from disadvantaged backgrounds. They may not meet national targets even if they have progressed their students significantly. Conversely, schools with more school-ready students who meet targets could still perform below their capabilities. In other words, not all students are the same, not all schools are the same.
Mm-hmm.
Success looks different in different contexts.
That's right.
What are you talking about here? Are you talking about benchmarks like NCEA pass rates and national standards when you talk about those benchmarks?
What we're talking about, the current benchmarks we're talking about are NCEA national standards. So at the moment, schools and teachers are expected to move a proportion of their students towards a national benchmark. However, what we think it would be more useful is to look at the progress and the value that each teacher and each school is actually adding to the kinds of students that they're educating. So we think that value-added measures or progress measures are more important and more meaningful than just looking at attainment, the end result.
Aren't they already there? And isn't this part of the debate that happened over national standards, that actually there's numerous measures and numerous data already available and we don't need another blunt instrument? What would you use on a value-added approach? And is that data, that information already there?
At the primary level, national standards level, I understand that they do look at progress measures, so they are trying to move students from A to B, but the target is still a national level target. So they still have targets that are national benchmarks, so they're still not considering the numerous characteristics and factors that students start school with. So we still think that there's still a lot more that can be done with the data that's available.
And data, again, being what teachers are noting in a classroom sense with individual students' progress, that's the sort of data you're talking about.
Well, yes, that, and we also know that, for example, the ministry has looked at the sort of individual factors that contribute to student achievement. So we know that there are factors that can mean that some students do not progress as fast as other students. So that kind of information can help you to understand to look at whether your group of students is progressing as well as another similar group of students in a different classroom.
So my point is, does that data already exist? Is it already gathered by teachers and schools, but it's not used in national comparisons? Is that what you're saying?
At the secondary school level, so year 11 to 13, that data is available. So because that we've got a national administrative data held by the Statistics New Zealand called the IDI, which is Infrastructure Data Database, and that holds individual data on individual students, and you can actually use that data to have a look and see what sort of outcomes students get once they've left particular schools.
So when you look at what the alternative measures are, you've got principals here frustrated that schools are pitted against each other on current measures of student achievement. Mm-hmm. Just coming back to this again. So when you talk to principals, say those who've got lower average achievement on those measures, mm-hmm. what are they saying to you would be fairer for them?
Yes, what they're saying is that they should be compared with schools that have a similar intake of students. So I did speak to, for example, one principal that had 40% of her students coming from migrant backgrounds where they didn't speak English at home, and she was saying that when you've got national league tables that pit her against other schools, she necessarily looks worse than other schools. So what the principals are saying is that they should be compared with schools with similar intakes of students.
Again, we seem to be looking at two different things in a way, but I'm sure they're related, which is how schools are operating, whether they're operating professionally, safely, meeting important things like financial and curriculum delivery.
That's right.
Morale, all those things. And then on the second side of it, we're saying those schools that might be working in challenging environments but actually doing relatively better for their kids than a privileged school that's not bringing out the best in its kids, that needs to be measured also. Again, are these different things or are they likely to be pretty closely related?
I think they're closely related. I mean, a school, what happens in school is fairly complex, but the information that's gathered at the level of teachers, at the level of school, can tell us a lot more about how students are doing relative to their potential. So they are all closely related. I think that a school that hasn't managed to manage its financial situation well for long periods of time, or student well-being or safety, may not necessarily be doing very well for its student achievement results as well. So it's all related.
Speaking of those big results, measures, NCEA, a very big focus on increasing pass rates for Māori and Pacifica students at NCEA level 2. And on the face of it, there has been a big improvement in those pass rates, and you make the point here that they're improving at a faster pace than the national average. Mm-hmm. However, do you have any observation beyond that? Again, is that getting too obsessed with one measure and not looking in a more nuanced way at other things? Or is that a good result?
I mean, we have to acknowledge that on those benchmarks that are currently available, that it looks like we do have positive results for this group of students. So they are improving on these measures. However, we are still missing that nuance. We are still missing the element that tells us whether they have actually improved as much as we would have expected them to improve. So there is still that nuance. There's still problematic areas with the way that NCEA national targets and national standards are actually being measured, yes.
Thank you very much for coming in this morning, Martine Uda Mamuka. I beg your pardon. Martine has written this report. It is for the New Zealand Initiative. It's the first of three, I think.
That's right.
That you're writing on this. Now, we have quite a lengthy statement from the Ministry of Education, from Lisa Rogers, Deputy Secretary, Earning, Learning and Student Achievement, has replied. I'll read you just the most pertinent parts. Regarding interventions, we always support school boards to resolve issues themselves, but if the issues show no sign of being resolved, we can intervene in the governance of the school if we believe the operation of the school or the welfare or educational performance of the students is at risk. We review every intervention. We look at the evidence that the required outcomes have been met and that risk has been reduced before the intervention has ended. In 2013, the Minister of Education asked for a review of the statutory intervention process with a task force of experts set up. The group's recommendations were approved by the Minister in late 2014. We're working with them to implement them. We're changing the way we work with the sector, the way we pay for interventions, the way we approve and select appointees, and the way we support and develop appointees. And I think you would add data to that as well, analysing what works and what doesn't.
That's right.
Thank you, Martine.
Thank you.
28 and a half minutes away from 10. You are listening to 9 to Noon. We will cross to Australia before 10 o'clock as they end their marathon election.